Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban.
Bob, we have been social distancing here and we haven't gotten any FaceTime in the last couple of weeks. How have you been holding up, man? Tell me how it's been working from home.
Well, things have been good, but today was a real humdinger. You know, it was, it's been real busy. There's been phone calls and these Zoom meetings, video calls, and virtual conferences literally every day. Our clients continue to reach out with needs and questions. Some of the things just come up regarding how they're going to continue to operate in this space. At home, it's been good. You know, there's been things here in Evergreen, Colorado are a lot different than they are in, say, New York or on the West Coast. So it's been fairly relaxed. The stores are stocked with food and you can kind of come and go as you please. I've got 400 acres of open space right out my back door. So I'm not really complaining, although I do kind of feel like a kid in summer school in the sense that I'm working all day and it seems like everybody's out on the playground enjoying their summer vacation while this COVID scenario was playing out. But I really have got nothing to complain about. In fact, I've got lots of things to be thankful about. My daughter, who recently returned from the Netherlands, she's been ill since she got back a few weeks ago. And she's coming out of that and her coronavirus test came back negative. So things are good, Eric. Things are really good.
Well, we couldn't be more grateful to hear that. Nothing scarier than that right now. Bob, you know, we wanted to jump on this podcast today because there was a pretty big development yesterday that we feel needs to be addressed. And that was that the DEA announced that Epidiolex was no longer being treated as a controlled substance. By way of background, in 2018, Epidiolex was the first cannabis-formulated drug to be approved by the FDA. So enlighten us on the significance of this development.
Well, first of all, it feels a bit vindicating, right? I've shouted from the mountaintop with Garrett and Patrick and several of our great attorneys that CBD is not, nor has it ever been, a scheduled substance. And we've been met with resistance, not only from federal government officials, from some of the rhetoric that you've heard from the FDA and the DEA and other agencies. That message has been spread to law enforcement agencies across the country. Even industry participants have said, you guys are nuts. CBD is a Schedule I substance. Even people that I have great respect for in the industry continue to parrot the notion that somehow CBD is a scheduled substance. So the fact that the DEA and the FDA come out with this announcement as it relates to Epidiolex, a GW Pharma drug that its ingredients are not scheduled substances, is extremely vindicating and extremely validating, if you will, because that's what we've always said was black and white in the law. And now the government has changed its tune and said that CBD is not a scheduled substance. And what's interesting is what goes in behind it, though, right? Think about this for a minute. CBD in Epidiolex is marijuana derived. It sourced that marijuana from the UK and extracted its CBD and made formulations based on a marijuana derivative. So despite the fact that I've always said that CBD is not a scheduled substance, if CBD comes from marijuana, then it absolutely is a scheduled substance. Think about that. It's a marijuana derivative. It's a marijuana extract, which was the drug code that we went to court against the DEA back in 2016 and 2017 to fight over. So the fact of the matter that the DEA has reversed course and said that it's not a controlled substance, Epidiolex, which contains CBD from marijuana, which should be deemed a controlled substance, not because it's CBD, because it comes from marijuana. If that means that they've changed their ingredient to use CBD from industrial hemp, a lawful form of CBD, or perhaps it signals something even more than that, that they're using some sort of synthesized form of CBD. And that's worthy of a discussion too.
Well, let's get into the weeds on this a little bit more, because we've talked about previously whether or not THC is illegal or federally illegal. What do I mean by that? The Farm Bill legalized 0.03% THC by dry weight. We've talked about the challenge in even the dry weight part of that sentence. But for specifically on this issue, what do you think this signifies as far as THC's legality or the way it's being viewed now by the DEA? Is this a real change? Is this going to affect some change that we'll see on a larger basis?
Well, let's talk about the THC component for a moment, because THC is separately scheduled. Under our U.S. Controlled Substances Act, the CSA, the form of marijuana spelled with an H, for whatever reason, marijuana is indeed a controlled substance. Furthermore, THC is another scheduled substance. There is no other mention of cannabis or other cannabinoids anywhere to be found in the Controlled Substances Act, which governs which substances are scheduled or controlled or not scheduled or not controlled. So THC, interestingly enough, was also deemed to be no longer a scheduled or controlled substance if it's derived from industrial hemp. When did that happen? That happened when the President of the United States signed our Farm Bill of 2018, I believe it was December 20th or thereabouts of 2018. And when the President signed that, the language therein said very clearly that if THC comes from industrial hemp, and that industrial hemp is produced within a Farm Bill program, that THC is no longer a controlled substance. Now, the thinking, I believe, was, well, there's less than 0.3% THC in each plant. Therefore, we shouldn't be worried about the THC. But what if I grow 1,000 acres of 0.3% THC plants? I've got enough THC in that field to satisfy GW's need for THC or Pfizer's need for THC as a pharmaceutical ingredient or otherwise. And it's no longer a controlled substance. This is a huge signal by the FDA and the DEA for the permissive use of cannabinoids as the basis for medicines going forward. But it could have pretty significant repercussions in the industry.
Well, and I want to talk more about those repercussions, but I want to ask you this as well. If I am a pharmaceutical company, does this descheduling of Epidiolex make CBD or other cannabinoid-based drugs more attractive to me as a manufacturer?
Well, it just opens the floodgates, right? It's something that I've been saying since 2014's Farm Bill, which allowed for research from industrial hemp that was unfettered, scientific, agricultural, or market-based research. So why haven't we seen pharmaceutical companies going after scientific research based on cannabinoids from industrial hemp? CBD as an ingredient within a controlled or formerly controlled substance, Epidiolex, is no longer a controlled substance. Therefore, its ingredients are not controlled substances. This should open the floodgates for new drug applications, new drug investigational studies and clinical requirements across the board, and we should see an onslaught of pharmaceutical companies moving into this space very quickly to begin developing drugs that they probably have already been developing within their own research facilities for approval by the FDA. So it is about the beginning of a tidal wave, I believe. But remember, this signals that the FDA drug approval process allows for the use of CBD not as a controlled substance. And it doesn't talk about other non-psychoactive cannabinoids. Remember, THC is the only other one that was scheduled and is no longer a scheduled substance from hemp. So this means all hemp-derived cannabinoids are now no longer deemed controlled substances, but for condition-specific FDA-approved formulas. It doesn't necessarily have a bearing on the supplement or the food side of the industrial hemp CBD industry.
Well, Bob, I think at the end of the day, what's going on with the DEA? Just a couple weeks ago, we saw that they were expanding marijuana research in the United States. Now their descheduling Epidiolex. I mean, we can't probably correlate this to coronavirus or anything like that, but what do you think is driving these progressive changes we've seen over the past few weeks?
Well, it's a change in public policy. As you look at the fact that non-psychoactive cannabinoids continue to enter the marketplace as supplements, despite the fact that the FDA doesn't affirmatively regulate those products yet. The FDA commissioner came out several weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago now, and said that it would be foolish to reverse course on CBD. In other words, the toothpaste is out of the tube, so we've got to figure out a way to regulate it versus by trying to get rid of it. So that was a signal. I think that you see the calling for natural therapeutics, plant-based medicines as something that's really happening a great deal these days. And that's also opened up the door for development by FDA approval. And certainly the fact that the DEA has gone forward and allowed, quote unquote, marijuana or THC-related research. That's not surprising, because under the Obama administration, that door was opened, and it took years now for the DEA to even process the applications that were filed by such great researchers as Dr. Sue Sisley out of Arizona and other folks in the industry that have applied to do marijuana-related research. So this opens up that door, and the DEA's response there was primarily based on the fact that they've gotten a lot of political pressure and a lawsuit filed against them to process those applications and allow marijuana research to go forward.
Well, and so on the one hand, we have this progress, though, like you said, it's coming about through a shift in public policy. And on the other hand, to switch subjects just a little bit here and talk about this stimulus package and the CARES Act, we're now seeing the marijuana industry be ineligible for any federal loans. Where do we even dig in with this subject matter? This is an industry that employs so many people, that generates taxes. Is this a disservice? How are you qualifying this, characterizing this?
Well, the stimulus package is a really, really great topic. Let me just finish one more thought. I want you to think about the fact that we're talking about FDA-approved condition-specific drugs. How does that GW approval affect or impact the so-called CBD industry? Here's what I believe what we'll see as a result of that GW clarification or notification. I think that we'll see that more mainstream companies will enter into the supplement and food space, making low milligram content, broad or full spectrum cannabinoid, non-psychoactive cannabinoid products under the guise of wellness products and wellness supplements. We think that this is a signal for those folks to enter into the space. In the next 18 months, you'll see the FDA come out with final regulations governing CBD as a food or a supplement. And unfortunately, that also begs for the large-scale producers in the world of consumer products to enter this space in full force. That does not mean good things for the existing so-called CBD industry. And you know, it pains me to call CBD an industry because it's merely an ingredient. And I think that the big institutional players, when they come into this space, they'll begin to recognize that this is an opportunity to put non-psychoactive cannabinoids at low level of milligram content into a variety of products. And it might put 40 to 60% of the existing CBD players out of business, because these larger companies already own the shelf space. So I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but I do unfortunately see that happening. So these companies that exist in the space now have to really create a niche product, have great distribution, have great facilities that are GMP certified, and or look at partnering with other companies right now as a result of this pandemic to protect themselves and to line up and have a lifeline, if you will, so that when this is all said and done, that they can compete in a post-COVID environment, so they can compete in a post-GW pharmaceutical CBD descheduling environment. All of these things are coming to make things very, very difficult unless you partner up and enter into mergers, joint ventures, and the like right now so that you have a diverse product portfolio. Now, let's shift gears on that. Let's shift gears to the stimulus package, because you present an interesting topic here. We know that the stimulus package dollars are offered at multiple levels, at the state level, at the local level, and the federal level. Let's start with the federal level. At the federal level, the SBA has made it eminently clear that if you are in the business of violating federal law, i.e. marijuana producers, that you are not eligible for those funds because you're violating a federal law. This puts those marijuana-related businesses in a very, very difficult position. It might allow their employees to qualify for funding on the outside, but it does not appear to allow any hope for marijuana companies to get those stimulus dollars. Now let's look at the other side of the cannabis industry, the hemp side. Hemp is clearly, as we've discussed, 100% legal. This was the fight that we had made when we advocated for the language in the 2018 Farm Bill, which was ultimately passed in December of 2018, which meant that industrial hemp and its derivatives are no longer deemed illegal or controlled substances in this space. So hemp businesses can qualify under the SBA. However, I don't want to raise an alarm here, but I want to present an idea. What about the fact that CBD businesses are not acting with FDA oversight? They're not acting in compliance with FDA regulations because no CBD FDA regulations exist right now. So is it possible that someone at the SBA processing an application for a CBD company says, no, that company is engaging in unlawful business, because we've heard that rhetoric before, just because CBD is not regulated does not mean it's an illegal product, not by a long shot. But will some bureaucrat or line processor at the SBA make that determination? We're ready for that. We're being cognizant of that, and we want to make sure that our clients go in when they apply for these funds and make that distinction as readily as possible. Then last, at the federal level, what about ancillary businesses? What about law firms that practice in this space? What about consulting firms, accounting firms, advisory services, et cetera? Those ancillary businesses, if you're smart, it is a... the way you characterize the nature of your business on that application, you are not violating federal law if you're not engaged in the direct production or sales of marijuana products. And I would urge you to look very closely and carefully at the questions you're asked, because if you look at that, an ancillary business with smartly worded responses that are accurate, not misrepresenting anything, will qualify for those funds. So, now, those are really the long and short of the stimulus package. We can enter into the space and local governments. And those states and local governments have not yet seemed to make a distinction between marijuana and hemp businesses or what's legal and what's not under federal law. In fact, the states that I've read about, Florida as an example, have actually allowed marijuana-related businesses to qualify for state relief funds because it is legal in that state.
Well, and Bob, you know, simply put, if you are a cannabis business owner, if you own a dispensary, there are not a lot of options right now to help you stay afloat. However, one of the things that we have talked about is that need for collaboration in a post-COVID world. So what are the opportunities, or where can a marijuana business owner, somebody who is ineligible for any of these loans or any financial assistance through the CARES Act, where can they look to? What can they do to structure themselves for long-term success right now?
Well, the good news for marijuana-related businesses is that they can at least come close to staying afloat, if not float pretty substantially, because marijuana businesses have been deemed quote-unquote essential businesses by most states that have those businesses operating. We've talked about that on prior podcasts, and that's been much of a discussion in the industry over the last 2 to 4 weeks. So by increasing their production and increasing their sales and providing incentives for purchasers that are eligible, whether that means you're a medical patient or whether you're over 21 years old, to continue to purchase those products. They can be delivered. There's curbside pickup available. So those businesses can continue to operate. I wouldn't say as usual, but if they're smart and they play their cards correctly from a marketing and business development perspective, they should be able to come close to staying afloat just by moving product in this cycle. But collaboration really is the key for most businesses. Think about that for a minute. I've said this many times, so I don't want to beat the dead horse, but at the end of the day, if businesses were strong going into this pandemic scenario, those things are off the table. That doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter that you were on target in the next 48 months to reach $10 million in sales and or to be acquired or merge with another company that was larger than you. Those things don't matter anymore because all bets are off. If you don't stop right now, most importantly, check your ego at the door and pull out that document that you hopefully put in a drawer a couple of years ago when you began your CBD or your marijuana-related venture, your business plan. Take it out. Look at what your business plan objectives were and understand that the only way you're going to get from point A to point Z is by partnering with people along the way. So what does collaboration mean by virtue of a business plan or in real life? It means that you need to diversify your product offerings if you're a CBD company. This means partnering up with other companies that offer distinct product lines that either complement or that are very different from the lines that you offer. Build out your portfolio of offerings. Create synergies with your operations. Do that now before it's too late. The need for individual small to medium scale extraction labs is waning by the hour at this point in time. So you need to line up. If you're a professional service provider or a marijuana-related business, you need to. You don't have the option any longer. You need to come through this with an understanding that on the other side, you need people to stand shoulder to shoulder with you, offering distinct but similar products in terms of the overall scope of what you offer. Same with service providers. Look at our law firm. Our law firm has been on a very, very good upward trend for almost 10 years now. It's been uncanny, frankly. But as we look at getting through this, we continue to be busy. We continue to be strong. And we hope and we help our clients maintain their strength in this marketplace as well. But unfortunately, the economics of this determine that if our clients don't continue to be strong and strengthen their operations by looking at alternative merger-like scenarios, then they might not be able to pay their bills in 60, 90, or 100 days. And then that has ripple effects through a business like the Hoban Law Group. So will the Hoban Law Group be able to stay the course, or will it need to revisit those offers, those calls, those letters it's gotten nearly every month for the last 10 years from larger or medium-sized firms that want to merge with it? That remains to be seen, but you have to be thinking about it right now, and you have to be thinking to do so. What I'm saying to most companies, especially small companies, you are now forced to do so.
That's just one symptom of the COVID pause. One last thought that comes to mind, especially in regards to collaboration, is does this make the case for vertical integration, or does this challenge it? Is this a good reason for why vertical integration should be avoided?
Well, I've always never been much of a fan of vertical integration. I think it was a good policy for the governments so that they can have their finger on the pulse of who's doing what. They understand that there's less licensees when everybody's integrated. Plus they can track everything from one source, from being cultivated to a wholesale fork to a retail fork. So I think that it made sense for a lot of those reasons. But as we look at the non-psychoactive cannabinoid industry, CBD as we call it, it's an ingredient-based industry. So vertical integration doesn't make sense there. Let farmers do what farmers do. Farmers should produce a multi-purpose crop that contains a variety of products to offer to multiple industries, to multiple verticals, in order for the farmers to be protected. which means that vertical integration does not make sense. I'll repeat that. It does not make sense on the hemp side of the industry, because if you're growing a single purpose crop for CBD, those days are over. And if you're growing a crop that services multiple industries, that's too unwieldy of a business to be vertically integrated. On the marijuana side of the industry, because we have intrastate regulation and limitations and restrictions, vertical integration makes a little bit more sense from a policy standpoint, but I'm not so sure it makes sense from a business standpoint when you look at the fact that flower is flower. Yes, genetics matter in the marijuana side of the world, but whether you're producing flower or biomass for extraction, those can be provided in a less than vertically integrated manner, and that's what I'm a strong proponent of. So I'm not so sure that COVID has exploited anything that didn't exist already before this scenario. But I think it continues to cause us to move away from a vertically integrated scenario, except for cottage, small craft elements of the marijuana and hemp industry.
Well, Bob, this has been an exceptionally informative 30 minutes. You are certainly taking advantage of these dog days of the COVID pause, as I know you've coined it. I really appreciate you coming and diving into all of this with me, and I can't wait until we can finally catch some FaceTime again, hopefully in the near future.
Make that a plan, Eric. Appreciate everything. Stay well. Thanks again.
Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minutes special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.